Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Kane Stone, described as the soul archaeologist. We'll find out exactly what that means in a few minutes. And he is an internationally recognized spiritual teacher and healer and creator of the Transformational Beneath the Sand program. We'll also hear about that. With his ability to energetically retune a person's body, mind and spirit, Kane has helped thousands of people all over the world remember and experience their divine nature. From spiritual messengers exploring greater authenticity to people suffering from physical pain and emotional challenges to people wanting to transcend knowing spiritual truths to actually experience them. Kane has spoken alongside such luminaries as Neil Donald Walsh, Lynn McTaggart, Marianne Williamson, Don Miguel Ruiz, and many other powerful spiritual helpers. So he walks in good company. Welcome to the program, Kane.
Thanks so much, Mike. It's great to be with you.
Well, I was very pleased to have you. Now, as I mentioned in the opening there, is the name, the soul archaeologist, your idea, or is that just what you've become known as?
I think it's what I've become known as. I was sort of brainstorming with a friend trying to understand how to communicate what I do in the form of a simple metaphor. And I was talking to her about my experience that so many people are caught with the idea that, and I think this is probably a human condition, that we're sort of fractured and there's something fundamentally wrong with us. But my experience is that our wholeness is found deep within. And in that moment, she looked at me and she said, "You're the soul archaeologist." And I said, "That sounds about right."
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, that certainly does explain what it means. You're like an archaeologist. You go digging around in the past.
That's exactly right. Yeah, maybe the thing to think about it is, of course, I think, you know, everyone listening understands, you know, time and space are sort of an illusion. You know, that's not really what's real, but there's a space within us where we're all whole. And I think the truth that I'm trying to point at, and of course, words are almost by their nature inadequate for describing it. But, you know, when we dig down deep within, we uncover these things, and hopefully that's what I'm alluding to when I refer to that.
Right. Now, I gather that you're, on the face of it, relatively new to the work you do. Am I correct in saying that you've done it for a mere 4 years?
Yes, that's right. I am, to my way of thinking of it, I'm new to it. I've been told I've done this in many previous lifetimes, and when I work with people, they find it hard to believe that I've only been at it for 4 years, as you say. But yeah, it feels new to me this time around.
Right. Now, I find, not only through the guests I have on the program, but through reading about other people's lives, and indeed my own, that many people are very almost forcibly directed in life as to what they should be doing of a spiritual nature. Now, I was told by another clairvoyant exactly what I was required to do, and it was quite different to what I'd been doing prior to that, but I thought, okay, somebody obviously thinks I can do it, so I'll give it a try, and that's it. Now, you have a story to tell, I believe, of a similar nature.
Yeah, I was, you know, the funny thing is that when this happened, Mike, I had never seen a clairvoyant. I had never talked to an intuitive or hired somebody to do this before. And I just, of course, there are no happenstances. I was going to say, I just happened to be at this meditation retreat, but of course I didn't just happen to be there. But a fellow participant in September of 2007, at the end of a meditation retreat with the Art of Living Foundation, we were doing a closing meditation, and we had been in silence for 3 or 4 days. And he got out a piece of paper and he wrote on it as we were finishing up our meditation, "You should be working as a healer." And up to that point, I was a mortgage lender and helping people accumulate debt and develop financial strategies for wealth and all of this excitement. Anyway, he writes this on a piece of paper, and I started sobbing uncontrollably, and I understood the words, "you should be working as." That all made sense to me, but I didn't know what a healer was. I had no concept of it, and of course, my soul, I think, was responding, and therefore my body and my mind went along with the act and just had that, you know, that really visceral response to hearing the truth. And started crying. He turns out to be right. That's what I was supposed to be doing. I just had no idea. It's like you say, sometimes we have to be forcibly told.
Right. Do you think your emotional response was something that you recognized inside of you?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there have been times when I have read, if I think back to my life prior to that point, certainly since then, but prior to that point, when I would read or hear somebody speaking the truth, I would have that response. Perhaps not so. No, it's not so pronounced. I mean, I wouldn't start wailing and sobbing as I did on that afternoon. But for example, reading Eckhart Tolle's book, The Power of Now, some 5 or 6 years prior to that point, I cried when I read it. And so, yes, I think that response for me is absolutely about seeing and recognizing the truth.
Right. Now, I gather you realized that you could heal or would heal, and you knew for some reason that it wouldn't be as many practice it by laying on the hands. And I gather it took you a very short time to find your true path.
Yeah, it's funny because when this gentleman, his name is Lynn David Martin, when he wrote this on this paper, and then when we came out of silence, he said to me, You'll find you've done this for many previous lifetimes, and you'll find this is more natural than healing or more natural than breathing for you. Mm. And I thought, you know, this guy needs to go visit the insane asylum. And, previous lifetimes, what is he talking about? And more natural than breathing. I mean, what's more natural than breathing? And a couple months later, I just started doing it. I mean, I didn't go to any training or anything. In fact, there's a funny story around this. Like, I hired Lynn, I think it was in the last days, maybe it was like the 28th of December of 2007. I hired him to do a reading, you know, and he does trance channeling. Mm-hmm. And I was terrified because I'd never done this before. And, you know, he tells me, come up with your list of questions. And we get on the phone together, and I'm feeling very emotional. And I've got all these questions that I want to ask about my life. And he slips into channel, and I can't shut him up. He keeps talking about all this healing stuff. And, you know, I'm thinking, hey, this is my dime. I want to know the answers to my questions. I don't want to hear about this healing garbage. And the funny part about it is that my experience of that conversation was that I was being told in no uncertain terms that I did not need to be trained, that training would not be appropriate, and that I should just go start doing it. And so that's what I did. And then I think about a year ago, I found the CD that Lynn had sent me of this recording, and I listened to it. And the thing that's so funny about it is he didn't say any of those things. What he said was that I should go be trained and on and on. Of course, I heard what I needed to hear. So anyway, to your question, yeah, I put hands on and I would feel a sensation in my hands and feet in particular. My feet, I learned pretty quickly, was telling me about, if you want to think of it this way, the person's alignment with the frequency of the divine, or the degree to which they were in tune with that. And my hands, the buzzing in my hands, or the lack thereof, was telling me the degree to which that individual was tuned to the frequency of perfect health. And what I discovered very quickly is if the palms or the fingertips of my hands were touching something like a person's skin or their clothing, then that got in the way of the feedback. And so the minute I stopped touching people, stepped across the room, or very quickly worked with people around the country, around the United States, and then around the world, I was actually getting better information. And then, of course, you know, there were the experiences of, you know, pretty extraordinary things that happened in some of those early sessions that I had. And I really feel like those were designed to kind of get my attention, you know. Pay attention to this. This is not a parlor trick, Ken. You're doing, you know, there's something real happening here.
Right.
But yeah, there was the hands-on piece is just not really part of my experience at all.
No, not you. I've done both, actually, over a long period of years. I was with a society that used to practice healing, and we did it at one or two festivals or exhibitions, whatever you want to call them. And we used to do healing around people from a short distance away and feed energies into their aura. But anyway, that's by the way. Now, you're talking about people needing to be in tune with the divine, or perhaps learning about their connection to the divine. Yeah. Now, some people might not even know they have that. So what would your answer be to someone who wanted to know what you're talking about?
Yeah. Well, that's what a great question. So my perspective is not a function of any particular point of view. It's not, you know, I work with people who are evangelical Christian or Orthodox Jew or Muslim or Buddhist or on and on, Hindu, and also people who have no particular faith, or I mean, I guess we could say they're atheist or agnostic, or, you know, whatever the right way to describe that is. And when people ask me, you know, do I need to believe in anything? Do I need to believe in what you do or in any higher power? I tell them no, because the truth is not dependent on a person's beliefs. In fact, the truth, what's real, has, you know, in some cases, very little to do what people actually believe is real. And so in my experience, personally, and also the experience that I facilitate, is about having a direct experience of that energy. And what we call it doesn't much matter. I mean, you could think of it as the energy that underwrites everything in the universe. It's the thing that is common to everything, sentient or non-sentient. And I guess what I find is that when people begin to have that experience, it's a visceral one when I'm facilitating that, and they may not have words even to describe what's happening to them, but they're having a very deep, moving experience of that, whatever name they call it or don't call it.
Yes. So our experience on Earth is real enough to us, but do you believe that compared to what it could be, it's quite an illusion?
Yeah, what a great way to put it, right? I mean, the illusion is, or part of the illusion, I guess, or the origin of the illusion, as I would see it, is in the belief that we're separate from. Mm. And that separateness, whether it's from you to your neighbor, or you and me, or you and your divine, or the universe, or again, whatever energy you want to call that. And it's from that illusion of separation that everything else springs forward. So, yeah, I think that when you talk about that illusion of the world, I think the spiritual journey, or the journey that we're all on, whether we recognize it as a spiritual journey or not, is really just one of an evolution of perspective, and it's a continuum, and so it allows or gives each of us the opportunity to interact with it from so many different perspectives, and that's part of the excitement of the whole thing, isn't it?
Is part of what you do to help people create oneness around them, or to lose that separateness and replace it by oneness.
Yeah, that's a great way of saying it. I mean, I think probably the most succinct way that I could say it would be to say that I help people remember and experience who they really are. And at our most fundamental core level, we are all one. We are all whole and complete. Of course, the fundamental human condition that most human beings experience is quite different than that. And this gift that I've been given is to help people actually have a visceral experience of that. I mean, knowledge is incredibly powerful, and there's a limit associated in particular with spiritual knowledge as I see it, which is that until we begin to actually experience the truth of the knowledge that we have spiritually, there's still a gap in our awareness. And I recognize there are some traditions and approaches that are entirely contemplative, but that's not my experience of moving into that space of wholeness or oneness that you're talking about. My experience of that piercing through that veil of separation or that illusion of separation is very much on the experiential end. It's a visceral experience, and that's what I'm able to facilitate for other people.
Right. I'm guessing that most people probably don't even realize that there is a separation within them, do they?
That's right. I mean, I think people, the way that people think about this is perhaps framed in many different ways. I mean, separation can show up from a feeling of just being disconnected from oneself to a feeling of having been abandoned by a higher power or, somehow shunned. I think some religious traditions talk about a very personal relationship with the divine, however they define that. And sometimes that can be disillusioning for people that go through hard times. They feel that they're being punished or these types of things. Mm. And those, I would say, are all examples of separation. I mean, another example of separation would be being in physical pain.
Yes.
Or emotional pain, which I think most people can certainly identify with. I mean, who among us has not had physical pain or emotional pain in their life?
Absolutely, yes. I doubt if there's anyone that's been totally free.
Yeah.
I guess we wouldn't be here if we were.
That's right. To me, that's part of that paradox between the dual, the belief and experience of separation, and the non-dual, or the belief and experience of oneness. And of course, both are real. I mean, you're in the United Kingdom right now, I believe, talking, and we're communicating live. And yeah. I'm in Colorado in the States, and so I don't know how many thousands of miles and a number of time zones separate us. And so, in addition, we appear to be quite distant physically. Mm. And yet, on the other hand, you and I are one, along with everyone who's listening in.
Yes.
And the experience of those two simultaneously could be confusing.
Yeah. Well, that really brings me nicely on to one of the two primary areas of the focus of your practice, because you refer to people who are recovering from PTSD, which is post-traumatic stress disorder syndrome. So tell our listeners a bit how you approach that problem.
Yeah, you know, the PTSD is an easily identifiable and pronounced example of where separation is creating incredible challenge for people. And one of the things around trauma that is so, maybe it's confusing, is that the source of trauma is in the eye of the beholder. You know, it's in the experience of the person who has been through the trauma, and the trauma, people who have PTSD, or it's more, I guess, a variant of it would be complex PTSD. It's very clear to other people in their life that there's something that's happened to them, because I mean, they're affected in very deep ways. And we could say that some of the ways that they're affected are physical. They might be in physical pain if they've been through a natural disaster, an accident, or war, for example. And also there's a huge emotional component, things that are triggered as a result of going through that trauma. And I think everyone at some level, whether they would describe it this way or not, also recognizes a spiritual component of PTSD. And the way I describe it is that my experience of it is that the soul actually begins to leave the body when any human being experiences a trauma. And you can actually see that. Any person can see that when you look in somebody else's eyes and you see sort of that hollow look. If you think about people that you have in your life that you love, maybe they've been through, this happens when people go through through treatment with cancer. You know, they get that kind of hollow look. And that hollow look, in part, I believe, comes from this spiritual experience. So the thing that's a bit of a mind twist for people who are experiencing PTSD is that the impact of these 3D experiences, witnessing somebody dying, going through a natural disaster, going through sexual abuse, whatever the circumstances of the trauma are, has an impact all the way down at a spiritual level. And what's incredible to witness is the journey back, the recovery process. When I work with people who are suffering from PTSD, is actually the origin of that takes place on the energetic or on the spiritual level. And when that level gets sort of put back together, the simplest way we could say, we've been talking about it already, is we have the experience of ourselves viscerally as whole. One of the byproducts of that is that the physical and the emotional manifestations of that trauma heal. But it's not fair to say it's not the intent, but that's not the focus of the work that I do with people. The focus is to experience and discover the place within that is whole. And when we find that, no matter what is going on in our lives, whether we're suffering from post-traumatic or recovering from post-traumatic stress disorder or cancer or some physical or emotional challenge or source of pain, it shifts in really profound ways. So my approach is entirely spiritual when I work with these people, and the impact can be felt physically and emotionally many times immediately, and sometimes it takes a while. I mean, sometimes it could take 2 or 3 weeks before somebody starts to feel a change and a difference, but it's incredibly moving experience for me, because I mean, when you work with somebody who is in that much pain and discomfort emotionally and physically, their world outlook completely changes when that pain goes away. It's really profound.
Right. Does that mean that emotional pain can sometimes be the result of people being unable to forgive someone for something they've done against them, or say a feeling of guilt?
Yeah, yes, and I think the interesting thing about sort of dissecting that is that the feeling of guilt or the lack of forgiveness ultimately is an artifact of separation. I mean, that's a perfect example of separation. So, like, I can think of one client in particular, and I want to leave, you know, the client names and these types of things anonymous, of course, to respect privacy. But I feel like we can talk about this generically. This gentleman had been deployed in, I don't know, 3 or 4 different war zones. And he had a tremendous amount of guilt over a soldier who was indirectly under his supervision who had been killed. And he felt like he like he had some responsibility for that. I mean, he actually felt like if I had done this, this, and this, this young man would not have died. In addition to other issues, you know, physically and emotionally that he was dealing with. And after working with me for just 3 weeks, actually, it was after the second session, so it was really a week in to our work, he passed the anniversary of this gentleman's passing, this young man's passing. And because of the work that he had been able to do in the space that I was facilitating with him, he actually, there was no discomfort around that anniversary. He remembered the person. He it wasn't like he was celebrating it, but he wasn't going through the symptoms. He wasn't triggered to be in a state of anxiety or stress or rage or panic or all the things that tend to come up around trauma. And one of the things that's also sort of paradoxical then in direct response to your question is, although these things could be artifacts of a lack of forgiveness of others or ourselves, my work is not really about processing that intellectually or even verbally. It's those things can be brought whole without actually addressing them. And so in many cases, people don't understand the true scope of the trauma, the impact that has been had on their soul or their mind or their body, and nor do they need to heal. To experience themselves as whole is just a remembering of what's real. And from that, everything else falls in place. As fantastic as that sounds, it's true. It's absolutely true.
Right. Does the belief that people come into life with a life plan have some bearing on how you treat people, in as much that events that happen in people's lives that may cause emotional pain or stress may have been intended to take them through some necessary experience for their growth? Do you look at it that way at all?
Absolutely. I think that what a great question. And I agree with that. I think that there's a lot of, I find a lot of support for that as I work with people. And one of the things that I tell people is, and I have been very specific with this around my guidance, or my guidance has been specific around this with me, that it is not for me to discern whether their quote unquote healing is going to happen the way that they desire it. Because they may yet have lessons that they are learning as part of their, as you say, life plan. Or they may have agreements or contracts with other people in their life that are yet unfulfilled. And because I see myself in a place of as a witness, I mean, really just a conduit for divine energy, it's not for me to say what those outcomes will be. I mean, all I can do is witness that person's wholeness as they can witness that themselves. And, you know, and then their own spiritual journey is really, as I see it, one of surrender and the practice of experiencing themselves as whole and continuing that for the rest of their lives, however their life turns out.
Yes, I suppose that without having that knowledge, some people must get very upset because they start to question how long they have to put up with some emotional stress or pain, whereas once the lesson is learned, presumably, that can be put behind them.
Well, absolutely. And listen, the easiest example I can share with you is of my own life. I mean, you know, my own basic lesson, my own basic challenge in my life has been one of self-love. And you know, I've talked a bit about the transition from doing mortgage lending into this energy work or healing work, and that, you know, there's all sorts of detail there, I'm sure, that is interesting to discuss, but perhaps not in a program this short. But the bottom line is that last spring I had left behind my mortgage lending career completely. And I had followed what I thought was divine guidance to be doing this professionally full time. And so this is the sole source of my income. And, you know, I wasn't making as much money as I needed to be making to survive. I mean, to pay my rent and over the previous two or three years, I'd already been through bankruptcy and, you know, my house had gone into foreclosure and, you know, it sold in a short sale of literally a week before the foreclosure was going to go through. And so I'd already been through my own kind of what I thought of as a surrender experience of letting go. And so I had my own very frustrated conversation with God that involved language that probably isn't appropriate for this program. But right. I mean, just in the spirit of just keeping it completely real, you know, I mean, basically the conversation, the polite version of it is, hey, God, I mean, here I am really feeling and witnessing your hand. And I don't mean this in a religious sense. I mean, to me, God and the divine are, you know, those are just two names for the same energy. And here I am witnessing this incredible energy flowing into people's lives. And yet in my own life, I feel grace all over the place, but here I am worried about buying groceries. And that doesn't that seem a little ridiculous? Now, this is a very toned down version of what I said. And it took me quite a while to learn to really learn this. And ultimately, Mike, when I did, the answer was to surrender. And that was not a decision that I came to comfortably or easily. I sort of feel like I'm representing the hard-headed, stubborn human beings on the planet. And on behalf of all of those people, whoever you are, I'm going through the harder version, the version of learning that involves a lot of pain and suffering of the emotional and life circumstance variety. And, you know, when I finally realized in my life, money is about love and love is about self-love. And I didn't know what that meant. I mean, I was looking outside myself for validation and I had all sorts of strategies that, of course, weren't working for that. And ultimately, on the 30th of June, I said, okay, here's the deal. I don't have the first clue what self-love is. I don't know how to get there. And I'm going to let go. And if you need me, you the divine, you universe, need me to live in a box under a bridge or out of my car or whatever you need, make it so. I give up. I'm going to stop trying to exert control and my idea of what this life is going to look like. Because 6 years ago, my idea of my life clearly was wrong. And my idea now is clearly wrong. So, you know, it's up to you. And, you know, about 4 or 5 hours later, I came out of an experience during which I literally thought I was going to drop the body. It was that painful and that difficult. And as I came out, I started experiencing a level of grace and support, not just viscerally, but in the outward expression of my life immediately. And an experience of a masterpiece that had been waiting for me to let go. I mean, looking back on it, it's as if I was a garden hose that was kinked up. I was compressing that hose in such a way that the divine energy, the water, couldn't come out because of my own willful design of what my life should look like and what I wanted it to be. And when I let go of that, I mean, there was the most important lesson of my life. And I chose to learn that in, I'm sure, not the hardest way, but for me, it sure felt like the hardest way.
Right. Yes, that's very interesting. There are a number of spiritual teachings that tend to tell us that we have to learn to love ourselves first before we can love another. Your experience seems to be suggesting something along that line.
Yeah, I mean, yes, that's absolutely my experience, but it wasn't until I could, I mean, I had read that over and over again, and people had told me, you know, this is all about self-love, Ken, you know, all of this drama in your life, all of this pain, I mean, 2-3 years before I finally let go, were telling me, and I mean, what this tells me is it doesn't really matter who tells you or how much awareness or insight other people have. It's not going to happen until you're good and ready for it. And when you're ready for it, when you really, in my case, let go and surrender it. And it was only then that I actually had the experience of self-love. And it was, I would say, one of the most profound, if not the most profound experiences of my life. And it has completely changed my life. I mean, I don't have conversations with God anymore about why I don't have enough money for groceries. I have plenty of money for groceries. And I attribute that absolutely to surrendering on and then stepping into self-love and the choice that I get to make every day, to, just as we all do, to continue to step into self-love, which in part is about honoring our own guidance, even when it appears to run contrary to what somebody else wants or needs in our life, no matter how close they are. And yeah, so absolutely, I think self-love is at the root of it.
Do you think the law of attraction has a lot to do with what happens to people, in the sense that they probably don't realize that whatever they focus on is what they get?
I do, but I probably have some controversial things to say about the law of attraction, Mike. Yeah. So here I get to go on record, and now there's going to be a recording of what I have to say. So direct your emails and your letters to BBS Radio, not to my website. I'm just kidding. You can send your emails to me. The way that I feel about the law of attraction is that it describes something that is fundamentally, absolutely real. But I think it's misunderstood. And I think the piece of it that's misunderstood is perhaps one of the most, see, and this is causing emotion to come up with me, which is telling me, along with other feedback in my body, that I am speaking the truth. So here you go. The challenge is that the law of attraction, as it's commonly shared today, is described as something that has become what I call spiritual narcissism. That is something that is completely a function of our own mental capacity and our ability to hold in our conscious awareness what we desire in our lives. And I think that understanding of it is not the complete picture. It's not that I would deny the power of the mind. It's that the power of the mind, when supported by the power of the divine, which happens when we surrender. It's when we surrender that we come into state of resonance with the universe. And when we surrender, that the universe supports us. And it supports us in ways that we can't comprehend necessarily. I mean, and so when you find somebody who is on purpose in their life, they're on their mission, and they're behaving in ways that are completely authentic and congruent with their core purpose and the core of who they are, the universe supports that in ways that are absolutely astonishing. I mean, this is my experience of it. But my experience of that, of having that come into my life, is not a function of clicking my heels three times and repeating mantras and visualizations, and this is what I want, I want. It's actually the opposite. It's me saying, I know what I want, but I don't know how to get it. And I think I'm on purpose here, but I clearly am getting in the way in some way, and so I'm going to let go. I'm actually going to let go of everything. I'm going to completely unhinge all of the references to outcomes or process, and I'm going to see what comes in. And it's only in that state of resonance, I believe, and certainly it's my experience, that at that point, the universe is able to come in and support. And what ends up happening is all of the other, you know, the law of attraction says, you know, you magnetize and attract, or whatever the language around it is, you know, the same thing in kind. And so when you resonate in this deep way with the universe, of course, other people that are resonating in a deep way with the universe, of course you're drawn together. I mean, you can't help but be. We're all one after all. And of course, at every step along the way, you can't help but resonate with other people who are in the same challenges, let's say, with with the illusion of separation. So it makes sense to me. I just feel like, you know, the key to success, although that language seems really shallow and sort of, you know, not speaking to the depth of this, but the key to that, to actually really truly experiencing the complexity and the beauty and the grace of this is surrender. And I don't hear a lot of people out there talking about that when they're talking about the law of attraction.
I was thinking more of the other side of the coin, where perhaps in your work you would get, say, someone coming to you who is very down and sorrowful, and they would say to you, everything I do goes wrong, nothing seems to go right, I'm unlucky. They seem to think everything is against them, and yet when they keep focusing on what they think is wrong, according to what people tell us about the law of attraction, they're attracting more of the same to themselves.
Oh, without question, I think that's right. Mm. I mean, I think another way of saying this is whatever you believe is true, you find proof for, right?
Yes.
And, I mean, without question, that's true. So my perspective on that, if somebody says that to me, is, you know, discover your wholeness within. And you can't think your way out of a mental trap of sadness. You know, you can't say, I'm happy, I'm happy, I'm happy, and then be happy. You need to have a visceral experience of being happy, and that's where I believe that experience of moving through the illusion of separation to one's wholeness can really turn tables for people. But without question, I got carried away with a question you didn't even ask me, Mike.
Yeah. Oh, that can't be bad.
I'm glad to hear you say it. That.
Oh, I can just sort of go and have a coffee and lead you to it. Right.
That's funny.
Now, we've got quite a bit of the program left, and we haven't spoken very much about your other primary area of focus, wherein, amongst the notes you've given me, you say there is a place inside where we are all whole and perfect. Now, some people might not understand what you're talking about. Yeah. What do you believe that to be?
Well, the framework for this is a download, I guess we could call it, or in conjunction with a vision or a picture that I got in the fall of 2010. And up to that point, I was thinking, you know, I wanted to create meditations or guided healings or whatever that attended to different various issues that people were having in their lives. Having problems with money, do this. Having problems with love, do this, etc. And in this particular session, this private session I was doing, all of a sudden I got this picture of sort of how everything fits together. And what I saw in that was a place where that exists within every human being necessarily, where that divine energy is flowing into us and it has not yet been distorted or broken apart. And I was shown how to take people to that place. And I guess the simplest way that I can describe this to you is that in that place, you do not feel physical pain. You do not feel emotional pain. You don't feel spiritual pain. You literally feel whole. And it's not a function of clicking your heels and saying, I'm not sad, I'm not sad, I'm not sad. It's actually a visceral experience. That is an experience in the body that the mind is participating in, that the soul is participating in. And when I say we have this within us, I believe that it doesn't matter who the person is on the planet, whatever's been done to them or whatever they've done to other people, they have that within them. So pick, I don't know who the turkey of the week is, but there's some dictator somewhere who's behaving horribly. They have that within them, the same as you or I. Right. And it's just a matter of accessing it. And when we do that, I mean, when I take somebody who's in advanced stage cancer to this place, their pain is gone. And it's not a matter of me saying to them, you don't hurt, and auto-suggestion or something like that. It's literally gone. They are experiencing themselves as whole.
Wonderful, yes. Now, we must leave enough time here to talk about your 4 days of healing, because you talk of it in terms of preparing people for 2012, and that it seems to indicate that you go along with the idea that many of us do now, that that is a critical year, and we need to prepare for ascension. So talk about what your 4 days of healing are.
Yeah, if you think about it this way, and of course the 2012 window, I mean, I think there are people that have really exquisite and particular information around this. I would say my awareness of it is more an awareness that's been going on for some time, I think, as it has in so many people. But the awareness that I have is that when we bring the three significant components of our being, that is our physical body, our minds, and our souls into a state of resonance, or we retune them to their natural state. And I would define that natural state in terms of being in complete alignment with the frequency of the divine and the frequency of perfect health. Then we integrate those three components together and do that in a way that has us in our bodies. I'm very much a believer and witness that the most powerful place that any of us can be and experience the spiritual is in the body, not out of the body. And I mean, that's what full integration is, or enlightenment. It's about integrating these three pieces. So in any case, the 4 days of healing are really about 1 day focused on the body, 1 day focused on the mind. And these are single sessions. It's not like it's 12 hours. They're about an hour long, or, I mean, they haven't happened yet. Obviously I'm doing them over the last 4 days of the year, and I'll be doing them live, and they're free. So people can participate in those just by signing up, and then we'll tune or retune the body, the mind, and the soul. And then on the fourth day, we'll integrate all of that. And then we'll go through an exercise of sort of energizing our awareness or our intentions for 2012, and then surrendering those and sort of opening up the opportunity for this masterpiece to flood into our lives. And I think it's going to be a really powerful event, and I'm excited to share it with your listeners.
Right.
And with you.
So it's probably a good idea at this stage for you to tell people how they can link in with that. I mean, presumably all they need is your website address.
Yeah, indeed. Thank you. It's Ken, K-E-N-W, just the letter W, Stone, S-T-O-N-E, .com. /4, and that will get you into the place where you just put your name and email address in, and then you'll be able to participate for free. So it's kenwstone.com/4days. And
is there a hyphen between the four and days?
Nope, just four, the number four,
just four
and
days. Okay.
And then that'll direct them over to the page where they can sign up. And as I say, if you just put your name and email address in, you'll be able to participate, and it's a completely free event. You'll be able to participate live, and the replays will be available online up through midnight Eastern Standard Time. And I'm doing these over in the States. I'm doing them between the 27th and the 30th, so that the people who are, say, in Australia or points east of you in Europe and Russia and Asia are able to participate in this before the end of the year, because truly we'll have people from all around the world participating. So
that's wonderful.
I'm not having an American-centric end of the year. I'm going to have a world-centric end of the year event.
Yeah, lovely. Yeah. So is your website also where people sign up for your weekly From My Heart emails?
Yes, that's a great point. If you look at kenwstone.com, there are links to a variety of different places. So when you sign up for the 4 days of healing event, you'll get my weekly From My Heart email, which usually comes out in the States on Wednesday, or, you know, could be Thursday, depending on where in the world you are. I send that out, and then there are other communications as well. And there are links to other, you know, I have a website at myhighestself.com, with some resources. I have a website at recoveringfromptsd.com. Each of these has kind of some different resources on it. I have a website at howdoisurrender.com with some videos talking about, you know, what the surrender process is like, and then some resources that are available there as well. So, just trying to share the insight and the gifts that I have, and do that in a way that's accessible to a lot of people.
Right. So I think I ought to make it clear here that the website you referred to is my highest self and not my higher self.
Yes, thank you. It is my highest. Yes, thank you. Yeah. Myhighestself.com. But you can find all of the links to all of these websites and everything at kenwstone.com.
Right.
You don't need to worry about any of the other domain names. The links are all there. And for the 4 days of healing, it's just kenwstone.com/4days.
And I gather also from that website, people can get a free download to the breathing technique that you were responsible for.
Yeah. This is a process that came in. It's funny. I have a client who said, "This is the most profound breathing technique I've ever learned, and it doesn't really have anything to do with breathing," which I think is very funny. I call it divine connecting breath because that's what it is, but it's not a breathing technique in the yogic, the traditional yogic sense. It's not a circular or a rhythmic breathing process. It's more of a guided awareness of, you could say, moving from an awareness of duality, which I think is the default for most of us, into the awareness of non-duality. And that's available free. There's a video teaching that or sharing it, and then that's also available as an MP3 download. And for people that sign up for the 4 days of healing, you'll get a link to that as well. I mean, I include that. There will be an email that you'll get that'll say, you know, here's access to Divine Connecting Breath. But like everything else, Divine Connecting Breath came in during a session. You know, these things have all been handed to me in a very intuitive kind of follow my – sort of obvious way. I think probably the divine has figured out that the only way to get Ken's attention is to do things in a fairly plain and obvious way. Thus, the gentleman in Arizona who says you need to be working as a healer, that shows up in session a year ago of how things fit together, it has to be sort of obvious or I miss it. So, anyway.
Right. Now, in 1 minute, because we are getting near to the last few minutes of the program, is there anything we should know about your transformational Beneath the Sand program?
The Beneath the Sand is the process that I teach or facilitate in private session, and it's available as a self-study as well. It's the way of getting to or accessing this place of wholeness that we've really spent our time together talking about.
Right. Yeah.
So Beneath the Sand is just my, you know, what I see, but it's really a series of guided energetic sessions of first clearing the blocks, and then most importantly, going to that place within. And then there's, as part of that self-study experience, there are some guided sessions that you can use on a daily basis to go to this place of wholeness. And when we do that on a regular basis, a couple times a day, that's what our life becomes. So that's what that program is.
Right. Well, that's very interesting, and the time's gone so quickly. We have now come to the end, although I will announce next week's guest to my listeners. So I have to thank you very much, Ken, for coming onto the program. You have a very interesting story to tell, and I certainly admire the work you've taken on there.
I'm so grateful for the chance to share time with you, and especially in this venue that you are out sharing what's real with the world. So thank you so much for the honor of being with you, Mike. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you, Ken. Thanks a lot. Right, friends, that was very interesting. Next week I have Savannah Arienta, who has a new book out called Lightworker, Understand Your Sacred Role as Healer, Guide and Being of Light. And it's principally directed for people suffering from depression, addiction or emotional disturbances, and as many do, searching for the deeper purpose and meaning in their lives, etc., etc. So, again, that should be a very interesting guest. So thank you for being with me today. God bless you all. Thank you very much.